Penguin Random House Audio presents Runner's High, How a Movement of Cannabis-Fueled Athletes is Changing the Science of Sports. This is the author, Josiah Hesse. To the naked running man, Daniel Landis, who really should have been in this book, and to my father, Rick Hesse, who taught me to question everything. Introduction. A snob waits in line. Pot is fun. Allen Ginsberg. As the jovial bro announces that it's almost time for the race to begin, I can't help but feel a little out of place. Thousands of runners have filled this Denver park on a chilly spring morning in 2015 for the Colfax Marathon. All of us sporting racing bibs, spandex compression tights, and expensively engineered rubber shoes. We're segregated into different groups according to our athletic ability, patiently awaiting our turn like cattle to the slaughter. We've all paid a decent chunk of money, devoted hundreds of hours in training, and endured near crucifixion levels of pain, not to mention climbing out of bed at this unholy hour. And for what? I ask myself. Why exactly am I doing this? The teenage rebel inside me says that I don't belong here. As a kid, I subscribed to the naive Breakfast Club view of social dynamics, which pegged me as the punk rock, anti-authority Judd Nelson archetype, or at the very least the squeaky goth girl in heavy eyeliner. Either way, I definitely wasn't Emilio Estevez, the thick-necked jock with daddy issues. I got my ass kicked by people like Emilio in high school, and ever since I've viewed anyone with so much as a gym membership suspiciously. But all that changed a few years ago. After a decade of hard drinking and smoking, I began running obsessively every day, structuring my entire life around sprinting across mountain trails and through city parks. On this beautiful Denver morning, I am in the best shape of my life, a low bar, admittedly, and am about to run a marathon down my favorite street in America while listening to a meticulously curated playlist of my favorite songs. So what am I so worked up about? There's a combination of gleeful excitement and stage fright anxiety surging through all of us as we wait for the air horn to announce the start of the race. The thinnest slice of pink daylight is creeping out of the eastern sky, illuminating the snow-capped Rocky Mountains to the west. A crisp chill in the air is turning our breath to steam as we stock up on as much oxygen as we can before the race begins. Remixes of top 40 radio songs are thudding from nearby speakers the size of my house, punctuated by an announcer, far too chipper for 6 a.m., reading a list of marathon sponsors. Despite living in Denver for half my life and feeling like I've met nearly all 2.9 million of its population, I don't recognize a single soul here. Everyone I know is still in bed, sleeping off hangovers and ringing ears after a night spent flailing before amplifiers blasting live rock music, its own kind of cardio workout. I accidentally make eye contact with a middle-aged man wearing a Broncos hat and one of those pink shirts proclaiming he's racing for a cure for breast cancer. He gives me a hearty smile and a thumbs up, and I look away. I don't want to be rude, but some part of me is just not excited to be here. Or at least, I won't allow myself to be excited about being here. It's a childish, idealistic side of me, to be sure. But it stems from the sincere belief that combining exercise and competition is inherently ridiculous. There are few things in life that bring me as much pleasure as running, but I've resisted the urge to document my running in any numerical way. To me, calculating the data of a run makes as much sense as measuring your heart rate while dancing, or counting your hip thrusts during sex. Running, for me, is about losing myself in the moment. Consciousness, time, money, ambition, fear of death, all of it should melt away in the hypnotic rhythm of one step following another, if you're doing it right. I've always had a hard time keeping myself in that state whenever numbers enter the picture. This is somewhat contradicted by the fact that I've meticulously assembled a 3-hour playlist for this race, with the BPM of each song curated to match the beat of my footsteps during each phase of the race. If I'm competitive about anything, it's that I have the best playlist of any runner here. especially if those numbers are viewed in relation to someone else's. And then suddenly I'm back in high school, unable to jog so much as a lap around the gym, as bullies and teachers laugh in disbelief. Unwarranted defensiveness fuels my criticism of this race and its participants. I'm tired and grumpy, and easily find something to hate about everyone around me. But then I sigh and tell myself to stop being such a snob. These people have just as much right to be here as I do, and who gives a shit if they don't run with the same quasi-spiritual, anti-competition mindset that I do? And besides, I remind myself, you have plenty of rebellious heroes who are avid runners, so it's not like there's no cultural precedent for you being here. This is true. The sprightly Bob Marley started every morning with a 5-mile jog, often followed by hours of soccer games in the afternoon and feverish dancing on stage at night, only to get up and do it again the next morning. Marley passed this routine on to his son Ziggy, who also doesn't believe in racing or counting miles, once telling Runner's World that he didn't even know how long a marathon is. The Clash frontman Joe Strummer was known to show up, unannounced, to run in various marathons around Europe. The one time he did bother to register, he finished the London Marathon in 3 hours and 40 minutes, a respectable time considering he hadn't trained and had guzzled a dozen beers the night before. And Alanis Morissette, whose iconic You Oughta Know has scored countless runs of mine over the years, regularly competes in trail marathons. Thinking of Joe Strummer makes me want to tear off this racing bib, throw my Fitbit in the gutter, and just run the whole damn race 1 block north of the course, as some kind of petulant protest against competition. But for months I've been looking forward to running a whole marathon along Denver's Colfax Avenue, the wildest, wickedest street in America. For whatever reason, the city of Denver has proudly adopted this line to describe our most popular street, often ascribing it to Playboy, despite the magazine never actually saying it. The fact that it would fabricate accusations of debauchery, instead of denying it the way most cities would, says a lot about why I love Denver. Home to my favorite dive bars, rock clubs, and all-night diners, and nurturing my literary heroes, Jack Kerouac and Hunter Thompson, both jocks, I remind myself, during their budding years. So instead of running away, I saunter to the bathroom. On the way back to the race, my eye catches a nearby trash can and I notice something peculiar. Mixed in with all the deflated energy gel packets, discarded bottles of Advil, and running salts is a collection of wrappers belonging to a different kind of supplement. While the labels of these products advertise flavors like honey and lime, and treats like mints, cookies, and gummies, they also have the acronyms THC and CBD. It's a discreet, seemingly innocuous detail, but it lets consumers know that they're about to ingest a substance that has divided our country for nearly a century. At the moment, I'm shocked to see these at a marathon. These products contain the same supplement that got me into running a few years earlier, turning me from a pack-a-day sedentary slug with a drinking problem into an energized antelope who eats 10Ks for breakfast, assuming said breakfast is consumed in the evening, as I, unlike Bob Marley, despise morning runs. And, I will soon learn, my story is not as uncommon as I believe. Not only is this substance consumed by scores of athletes in every field of competition, from the NFL to the NHL, from MMA to the PGA, but it has also fueled my rock running heroes Joe Strummer, Bob, and Ziggy, Marley, and Alanis Morissette. And, come to think of it, it's the same substance that transformed the Breakfast Club's Emilio Estevez from a bullying, competitive, status-obsessed ball of nerves into a smiling parkour maniac, screaming with joy as he sprinted and danced around his high school library moments after consuming the plant. It's cannabis, pot, weed, ganja, and while it's been hailed as a sacred herb, a multifaceted medicine, and a harmless recreant by cultures the world over for thousands of years, it only recently became legal here in Colorado, sparking a multi-billion-dollar industry that will soon sweep across the nation, leading to half the U.S. adult population consuming it by the year 2018, and 68% approving its legalization. Though right now, it's only 2015, and I don't know any of this.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?